Welcome to the Heart Journey Podcast. I'm Dr. Barbara Jean Losove, and I am coming to you as a minister who also happens to be a psychologist. Today, we have part two of our talk with Dr. Warren Kinghorn. He is such a hero. I'm truly a fangirl. And we're going to talk about wonder. We're going to talk about healthy relationships. We're going to talk about what does it mean that Jesus heals the broken heart. We're going to talk about surrender. We're going to talk about the solutions, the invitations of anxiety that invite us into wild, beautiful surrender. We're going to talk about walking with our God in a way that brings forth more and more wholeness. We're going to talk about having healthy friendships, healthy environments, and being parts of healthy churches. This is all part of our From Codependence to Christ Dependence series. Enjoy my friend, Dr. Warren Kinghorn. I love that I'm interviewing you in this podcast series because it's an example of where we want to go to. We want to leave control and codependency, and we want to move towards that koinonia, that hospitality, I felt the Holy Spirit there so much. And I'm thinking about one time in one of Dr. McCarthy's classes, I raised my hand and I said, well, I know this might sound weird, but I had this dream last night. And in this dream, I went to heaven and this happened. And it really was. I really did have a dream.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how it would be received, but it felt like it was on topic for what we were talking about. And he said, oh, you're a mystic. And he said, you should read Teresa of Arvela. And I just felt, wow.
Yeah.
It was a real risk for me to share that in an academic environment and to have, the person beside me who's like really kind of exploring Christianity. And then me, like, I had a dream and I went to heaven. And that doesn't always happen to me, but I loved the just kind of like that inclusive environment. And it's very different from kind of a like an environment of scarcity, an environment of control. So can you talk to us more about why we move toward control rather than a letting go and a loving?
Yeah. Well, just your comment about Dr. McCarthy's class made me remember so many years ago, I was a medical student, and then I took 2 years to do a divinity degree at Duke. So I came from medical school to divinity school, and I took church history from a faculty member who's no longer with us. She passed away several years ago, but her name was Susan Keefe, and she was a mystic, and she taught us early church history in the tradition of the mystics. And I heard later that when she would give an exam, she would hand out the exam. This is back in the old days when everything was on paper. Hand out the exam, and she'd leave the room, and she would go either to her office or to the hallway outside, and for the entire exam, she would pray for the students taking the exam. And that was her. That is absolutely who she was. And I thought, okay, this is different from medical school. This is not how the medical system usually works. And maybe different from a lot of, divinity school too. But I think there's that way in which, like, we can think about learning as more than just learning. It's also about, like, connection with God and with things that are greater than us. And, I think I talk in my book about this distinction between control and wonder. And I think so often our lives are oriented toward gaining and maintaining control. And control is an important thing. So you work a lot with survivors of trauma. I work a lot in my clinical practice at the Durham VA with survivors of trauma. And we both know how important it is when people have survived trauma to have, like, basic control over our bodies and lives and the circumstances around us. And so control is not a bad thing. Trying to help to gain control is, I think, part of what God gives to us. And though, if our lives are always oriented toward gaining and maintaining control, then a couple of things happen. One is that we get kind of, I don't like the clinical word, but we get a little bit paranoid or a little bit, like, too focused maybe on always having to have things under control. It kind of breeds anxiety. Like, am I under control enough? Are others under control enough? and it kind of turns us in on ourselves, and that can be a problem. It makes us very vigilant about everything all around in ways that keeps us from feeling free. And the other thing is that, like, if our lives are oriented toward gaining and maintaining control, we're going to give a lot of our own allegiance to whomever or whatever we think has put us in that place of control. And I think that could be that could, in the medical world, that could be a medical authority. It could be a medical technique. It could be a religious authority. It could be a religious system. It could be a political authority or a political leader. And any of that can happen, and I think does happen. And that's pretty much a textbook biblical definition for idolatry.
Yeah.
If we like seeking control, if we give our allegiance to something that we believe has put us in a place of control that's not God, we risk making it into an idol. So Christian faith calls us to see control as a good, but ultimately to understand that that's not the point of our lives. That, again, because we're known and loved by God, because God holds us in his life, you know, because he calls us into this greater vision of what it means to be human, we can move beyond control into this, like, space of wonder and of love and of praise and of Sabbath rest. And so one thing, you've heard me say this in the classes that I teach at Duke, first class session of every class, I'm always saying, like, how in our study of theology do we find ourselves not drawn toward keeping everything under control, but drawn toward becoming deeper lovers of God and deeper lovers of the natural creation around us and deeper lovers of others, including those that we might not be able to love very easily, and deeper lovers of ourselves. So how can we grow in love and expand in love? And I think that's a test for us. It's like we're called not to like cinch down on control for its own sake, but to become deeper lovers. And I want that for myself. I want that for my kids. I want that for, you know, for my patients. I want that for,
yes,
you know, for all of us.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I'm so glad I'm talking to you today. Like I said, I think of you often. I feel like I could just sit and learn with you for years.
Oh, same here. Yeah.
Okay. Cancel culture. This is another piece that I didn't feel at Duke. And yet I know that people are politically aligned in various ways, but I really want to give the TMC, and then even going to Practice in Presence and just being in your program and going to different events you put on, I hear you talking about how we could use government for good this way or that way. And yet I hear intellectual humility, cultural humility, even if there would be such a thing, political humility. In fact, politics didn't come up as much as here's what we can do for good. Yeah. And there was no rhetoric that I heard.
Yeah.
I absolutely love this because it felt very kingdom and not cancel. Can you talk to us about that? And because we're talking about whole relationship with myself, with God, with others, which your book references as well. Can you talk to me about that and talk to our listeners about that?
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful. Thank you for saying that. I'm grateful that was your experience. And that's what we want to be the experience of folks who come and study with us. But just frankly, it's tough. You know, we live in a world where cancel culture happens on both sides in different ways, various different political and theological binaries. And we tend to kind of seek, you know, as human beings, we tend to kind of seek those who agree with us. And there's so much of a tendency in our world and in the church, and maybe especially in modern universities, to kind of cinch down on like the in-group and the out-group, and to not want to listen to those that are in the out-group. I'd say, well, within what we try to do in our theology, medicine, culture work, as you know, like students who come and study with us come from a range of different Christian backgrounds. We have Catholic students, we have Protestant students, we have folks that would identify as more politically and theologically conservative, some folks that would identify as more politically, theologically moderate, or even liberal. And so what does it mean to find ourselves in a community where we're able to be together? I think one thing is we are committed to a kind of vision of faithfulness to Christian teaching. And And so like that's the goal. It's not like truth doesn't matter. We're not out for like difference of opinion for its own sake. Like we want to contend for truth together. And yet to listen while we're doing that, and to be able to have honest conversations, and to be able to like to do so in a spirit of honest searching together. And one of the things that I've found is that, I've learned from students and faculty who have positions that are different from mine, some of whom are more conservative than I am, some of whom are more, liberal than I am, in different ways. I found that I've seen people like build relationships with each other in surprising ways. I've seen people change their minds about different things, and like in different ways, like, come to a place that they, like they kind of begin to appreciate, like, say, a traditional teaching of various ethical things in ways that they hadn't before, because they kind of see it exemplified in people's lives. It's been really beautiful, and I think it's getting away. It's like that sense of like we're called to a common work of contending for truth with humility, but with the understanding that like this is important. We need to stick with this together, and that's what we strive to do. And I think that we've seen an era within universities where there's been a lot of there's definitely the external perception, and I think in some cases the internal felt reality of like of universities become this kind of monolithic culture. And in more conservative universities, it may be more conservative monolithic culture. In universities like Duke, it's perceived as a more progressive or liberal monolithic culture, and that other voices aren't welcome. I'll just say my experience of being in a secular research university has been that there's a lot more internal diversity than I think most people recognize. There's people who believe all sorts of things here and who practice all sorts of things. And there's also, I think, a willingness for people to have different perspectives. And so, I have some faculty colleagues that, and to some, and myself also, who've like for years have been involved in ways that like counter that perception of kind of monolithic progressive norm, and have found actually that people in the university are willing to hear that and willing to in many cases support that, even if they don't agree with it. I think there's more openness inside universities, at least at Duke, and I think also other places that I'm aware of, that I think often people give credit for.
I did experience that there, and I did experience Jesus at TMC for sure. All right, so I'm thinking more about kind of related to this anger. Thinking about when I think about anger and anxiety, I think about which the whole a lot of the cancel culture is built on. But I think about anger and anxiety. I think about in a way it's related to that sense of control that things are happening that I don't like. And I, one of the books that I read because of TMC was Curtis Chang's work on the anxiety
Anxiety
solution, I think.
opportunity.
And I love this idea of anxiety or anger. He mostly talks about anxiety, but I think anger is the same, is our invitation to surrender. And so we're talking a lot about anxiety, anger, and different feeling like a victim, different places we can get on the triangle of pain with codependency. Talk to me about the power of surrender and how we can surrender, how and what happens when we surrender.
Well, I would encourage, again, drawing on Thomas Aquinas, this medieval Christian thinker that I draw on in the book, I would encourage people to think about every emotion has love at its root. And so Aquinas would have said that, we feel anxious when we actually love someone or something, but we feel that it's threatened. And so reframing our anxiety around like what is it that I love that I feel is threatened? And often, I may feel anxious because my, daughter is driving home from college, and I think about how busy the interstate highway can be. And but my anxiety, which is a negative feeling, is a kind of reflection of my love for her. And I think a lot of our anxiety has that kind of function that we feel like something is threatened. So being able to kind of turn it around and like, how can we see all of our emotions, including the ones that are negative, as being in some ways reflections of whom and what we love, is doesn't always work. And it doesn't always work in part because sometimes the body can just, things can just happen in our neuroendocrine systems that we have these bodily reactions that, don't make sense. But in many cases, I think we can see it. We can see emotions in some ways, kind of signposts in some ways to whom or what we love. And that helps to put it not just in a place of like, have these feelings, I just need to get rid of them in whatever way possible, but rather like, what do these feelings have to teach me? And then I think, as with, I mean, Curtis Chang's testimony is so powerful. He's a successful pastor. He still is incredibly successful in what he does, but he just reached the absolute end. And for him, it was, as he narrates, it was this invitation to actually live out of control, and to give up his pretension of always being in control. And in that really hard experience, he found such freedom. And I think that's the question for us, is like, when we're facing real challenges, what's the invitation for us? Like, what's God's invitation for us? And so sometimes the invitation is going to be just to like get that negative experience under control as fast as possible, but in many cases it's going to be, what do I have to learn from this? And what does this have to teach me? And I found that in my own life. I've certainly heard that in my lives of my patients. I think it's just something we can ask. I would say though that, we need not to valorize psychological suffering as if like, everything's always a teachable moment all the time. If somebody is in the pit of depression and unable to get out of bed, or if somebody is like so anxious that they can't, they're just unable to engage in the kind of basic things that they need in their lives, then a medication may be exactly what's needed in that moment. Or a course of electroconvulsive therapy for severe depression may be exactly what's needed in that moment. So I do think there's sometimes when we just need to kind of do what we can to alleviate suffering and distress. But even that is to enable then things to happen in the future. So like we want to, help somebody to be able to get out of bed and to be able to start eating so that then they can lean into relationships and lean into therapy and begin to do those kinds of things that they know are life-giving. Medication and other things like that are never like the sole solution. They're never like the only thing that's needed to in almost every case.
Beautiful. Jesus is the healer of the brokenhearted. It's the way that I think about him. And in Luke 4, he referenced Isaiah 61. And when I look at the Hebrew word, I forget which actual word is there, but I do remember the definition for brokenhearted. It talks about basically trauma. It talks about a heart that's been mauled, shattered. I mean, it's really graphic. It mauled is pretty graphic. And so he heals our trauma.
That's beautiful.
Walking that out, because you and I have walked this out with so many people. And I think there's so there's science that heals trauma, that helps heal trauma, and then there's Jesus. And I think the science is like God's common grace. For example, I could go to AA, get sober, literally be delivered from alcoholism and that kind of dark oppression of that, and never become a Christian. Similarly, I can receive trauma healing from science and never know Jesus. But can you talk to us about how you understand Jesus as the healer of the brokenhearted and of trauma, of a shattered heart?
Well, I might reframe what you just said a little bit. I don't think that
Sure.
science heals trauma. I think science is a way of knowing. It's a way that we can gain certain kinds of wisdom. But what is it that heals trauma? Well, I mean, there's different kinds of trauma, but the root of a lot of it is that the world at one point has been profoundly uncontrollable, dangerous, and it's like broken our capacity to trust ourselves and others. And so those who are listening and those in our world who are trauma survivors like are constantly wondering, like, can I trust myself? Can I trust the world? Can I trust God? Can I trust the church? Can I trust any of this? So what heals trauma? Well, it's like it's relationships that give us the kind of glimmer of hope that we might be able to trust and love again. And so we can find that. You mentioned common grace. I think that's right. Like healthy relationships of any sort, even like, you know, kind of innocuous ones, can just be a little bit of breath of common grace to be able to help us to love and trust again. And in some cases, when people are really, really struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder or other things, then like structured trauma-focused therapy that, you know, helps people to feel safe and within that safety of relationship to really be able to open themselves to some of those experiences and find that they can find healing and growth. You know, that's common grace. You know, that's what's given to us. But as I said, as we talked about at the very beginning, like, you know, who, and you know, people come from lots of different traditions. I think other people from other religious traditions would have ways of naming this, but as a Christian, like where is it that we find ourselves perfectly known and loved, in ways that that honors and respects the like the goodness of us as creatures and the dignity and the worth that we really have? Like, where do we find that? And it's again, like in the life of God, you know, before God, like understanding ourselves, recognizing ourselves as deeply known and loved by God and invited by the Spirit into the life of the Son of God so that we can then look at the Father and say, Abba. Like, that's our deepest place of security. And so in some ways, like, all healing of any sort, you know, in some ways is kind of a gesture toward that, like, deepest being known, that deepest fullness of the presence of God and being fully known and seen by God and fully knowing and seeing God. That's what we're, that's what our hearts are longing for. And all the good work you do and I do as a psychologist and psychiatrist is a kind of a foretaste of that. It's kind of a practice of that. So that's how I would see it. And therefore, like, you know, good therapy, like good trauma focused therapy is good therapy. And it's participating in that common grace that helps us to be and to find ourselves able to love and trust again. But if that's where we end up, it's never going to be fully satisfying. Like, we find ourselves continually drawn on towards something that's higher and greater than we are. And Christians would affirm, at least I would affirm, that that's fully found in the life of God.
Yes. Yes. And the research shows that our brains are made for God. We just had Harold Koning on the show, and we were talking about some of Andrew Nirberg's work about how our brain is wired for God. And even thinking about meditating on God, praying, really changes our brain and helps it to flourish. So,
yeah. I mean, it's interesting. All the work that's come out recently on like Ian McGilchrist's work on hemispheric laterality, where he says, you know, our culture so focuses on left brain ways of taking up with the world, like, you know, this, like, you know, picking things apart, getting the answers right. But actually, almost everything that we value as human beings, you know, love and music and beauty and tenor and relationship and emotion is like mediated by the right brain. And yet it's like hard to name that. Now, I think that is a way in which, like, you know, we recognize that what it means to be human is more than just information. It's more than just like control, but it's like opening ourselves to a reality and a beauty that's greater than we are. And for Christians, you know, again, different people have different ways of interpreting that. But for Christians, we'd say that all is pointing us to the majesty and grandeur and beauty of God's life. Yes. It's a way in which, like, we as human beings are like find ourselves opening to that.
Yes. Yeah. As we close, I want to hear if there's anything left on the table that you'd like to share. And I'd also love to hear how God has changed your life.
Yeah. Well, I think relative to what we've been talking about, you know, I had a lot of learning to do and a lot of growing to do, even in my young adulthood. Like, I was very, what I was just saying, I was very left brain focused. I still am in some ways. I was really good at, you know, picking up information and performing well, but But I wasn't really able to really know what it meant to love and to be loved, you know, and my like even when I was a college student and a medical student, and I found that a number of things began to move in my heart. But you know, part of that was honestly moving toward marriage and then marrying my wife, and like we, I think, became means of grace to each other. And it was not through like my study of psychiatry, but it was through like learning to trust and to be open and to give myself and to be fully known and loved in a relationship that I began to also understand something of who I was before God. So I think so much of what like has happened in my life has kind of happened just as like grace that's kind of come along the way. And I'm just so grateful for that, you know. And I'm still learning, and I'm still finding ways that like I'm challenged by you and by the amazing folks who I'm surrounded with at Duke and at the VA and in our church. And so I'm just finding like now I'm in middle age, and I'm like really, there's so much more that I have to learn, and there's so much like this like the space of wonder, you know. At my best, like that's where I want to be. So I think I've found that I'm just on a journey in that way. And I think along with that, you asked if anything was left on the table. I think one of the key things I'd like to encourage those who are listening to do is to think about the words that we use for ourselves. So often in our world, we use like mechanical, industrial images for ourselves. We talk about recharging, we talk about refueling, we talk about burnout. You know, like what burns out? Like rockets burn out and engines burn out. And if we use like mechanical, we talk about, you know, like, getting away to recharge, all these things. So I think if we can get away from mechanical images for ourselves and replace them with like creaturely images, like, because we're not machines, but we're creatures, and we grow weary, and we need rest, and we need nurture, and we need nourishment, and we need friendship, and we need encouragement. And using that kind of language for ourselves, I think, helps us to put us on the right track. And I've tried to do that for myself, and I sometimes fail.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Dr. Warren Kinghorn, for being here with us and graciously giving us this hour of your time. I know your time is so precious. It means the world to me. So thank you so much for being with us. And
Same in reverse. Thank you, Dr. Barbara. I'm so honored to be here and so grateful to you for your work in ministry.
Oh, that was so good. I loved it when he's like, there's something else on the table. Thank you again, Dr. Warren Kinghorn, and thank you for listening. I know your life is being changed. I would love to hear about how the Heart Journey podcast is helping your heart to heal. You can email me at Dr. Barbara Ministries or Dr. Barbara at drbarbaraministries.org. Also, make sure you're following us on YouTube, TikTok, all the places where podcasts are shown, on Facebook, on Instagram. We love you and we do this for you. We have some free resources for you this quarter. I would love for you to work on your self-parenting with Jesus. Dr. Kinghorn talked about healing your relationship with yourself. Go to drbarbaraministries.org/self-parent and get our free tool. It's for you. We do this because we love you. Remember, we're podcasting 3 times a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Flashback Fridays, where we're serving up some relevant old content in some new ways. So next week, I'll see you this week and next week. Remember, we have Tuesdays, we give a podcast with a guest. On Thursdays, I do a solo podcast. Right now, we're talking about from codependence to Christ dependence. And then we have Flashback Fridays. I love you, and I will see you in all these places.